versions of the Old Testament, there's a passage on Moses introducing his Moorish or Ethiopian wife to his sister Miriam and his brother Aaron. Miriam and Aaron do not accept Moses' black bride and are punished for that by God. Art historian Elizabeth McGrath shows that Jordan's painting refers to this biblical passage.
Normally Moses, there are pictures, many pictures of Moses, and he's pointing to the Ten Commandments which he's holding. But here, by contrast, they're in complete darkness. My first impression was that Moses is inviting us to look behind him, not at his tablets of the law, but to look behind at the person he's shielding and protecting. Her expression is very interesting. She's both slightly amused but also bemused by this, by what's happening. She's slightly annoyed as well, as well she should be. It seems like he's doing something which is very modern and liberal, and something which is almost incredible in a painting of the 17th century, that he's asking us to accept his Ethiopian wife. That's what the picture's about. It's a unique subject. In fact, there is no other painting of this particular subject known in the history of art.
Moses' wife is known in the Bible as Zipporah. She's usually portrayed as a European woman, but in early Christian sources, Moses had another wife, an Ethiopian. Moses' bigamy didn't suit the church. In later translations of the Bible, Moses' two wives were merged into one, Zipporah. The black wife disappeared into the background. Jordaens, shown here in a self-portrait, was a Calvinist and an avid reader. He was most likely aware of the early Christian story about the second Ethiopian wife.
Jordaens is a very an artist who loves to interact with the viewer. He takes stories and he sometimes turns them right round. So something that would have been presented as just a narrative scene with various figures standing, he turns it round and makes the principal character look at us. Moses is saying to us, he doesn't care about what Aaron and the relevance of Aaron and Miriam. He's using the viewer's knowledge of this story to say, you must accept my Ethiopian wife, whom God has approved, because in the biblical story God approves, and shows his disapproval of their anger against Moses by giving Miriam leprosy.
My God, Moses, the girl is black. The end of Miriam's attack made Moses wince and set his jaw like stone to guard his tongue with law and hold his peace if somehow love might be reborn. There was more dove in Moses than the hawk. Her words, like wolves upon the hapless herds of Midian, had almost ripped the meekness from his heart and stripped him of the deep respect he had known for Miriam. Almost a stone now, Moses watched his sister's face and feared lest pedigree and race had eaten, like a leprosy of pride, the root of sympathy and killed the power to confess and serve as Israel's prophetess. The great man Moses turned his face to love a Cushite. He shocked all Israel, and while some mocked, he married her and said, she will be wife to me. Zipporah came from Midian, the Cushite, from the land of Sun. God made them love himself, then me. There is here no idolatry. But Miriam seemed singed with hell. Are there no maids in Israel? And is our own tribe so unfit that you would turn your face and spit on all the widows in the land and offer up your noble hand to foreigners? Has not the clan of Levi any wives a man like you could love or tolerate? Or Moses, do you really hate your own to raid a Cushite shack? My God, Moses, the girl is black. The thought flashed over Moses' mind. This is not Miriam, the kind and gentle prophetess. Oh, she was strong, but animosity was not her, the way her strength would show. And then she gave another blow and stunned her brother once again. Do you think you're the only man who hears the Lord in Israel? When God has plans, does he not tell me as well, and Aaron too, what he designs and plans to do? The knuckles of his hands turned white around his rod, and all the might of Moses' meekness ruled his heart, until the silence broke apart with heaven's voice. Come out, you three, before the tent. Confirm with me, and we will have a reckoning. And as they came before the king, the Lord descended in a cloud and stood with glory for a shroud, and said to Miriam, stand forth with Aaron now and hear the word of the worth of murmuring against the friend of God. There is a sudden end for pride in priest and prophet both. Beware, for I am God, and loath to let my friend be vilified for long. Do you not know that I hide my plans from prophets in a dream? They are not always what they seem. Not so with Moses, Miriam. All the words I speak to him are mouth to mouth and clear as day, and he knows everything I say. Why were you afraid to mock the faithful shepherd of my flock? And suddenly the cloud was gone. And Aaron looked and saw upon the skin of Miriam, as white as melting snow, the dreaded sight of leprosy. And Aaron turned, have mercy, Moses, we have learned our lesson well. Let her not be among the living dead, for we are old and do not always say what we approve. Now, brother, pray for her. Before the words were out of Aaron's mouth, there was no doubt what Moses meant to do. He knelt beside the rotting flesh and felt a wave of pity break behind his eyes and flood his face with tears and heave his chest for all the years he had known his sister's joy since he was just a little boy. She pressed her forehead into him and heard him say, I love you, Mim. It's only right, you know, that I should hold you near me now and try to save your life when you saved me more than once, because you braved the river glades and made the ark to carry me with pitch and bark above the flood of Pharaoh's wrath. And many times along the path for 80 years now, you have raised me up with songs, and I have praised the Lord for your prophetic gift. Forbid that there should be a rift between us in the evening of our years. I feel the same deep love for you today I felt beside the sea when you sang out the victory of God and led that massive choir. 10,000 women full of fire. Oh, Miriam, has not our God been good to us? You see this rod, it's been a snake and eaten three. It's beckoned frogs and split the sea. Now, Miriam, I'm going to pray. Oh, God, I simply ask today that you would heal my sister's life, remove the remnants of our strife, create a bond between my wife and Miriam, and let no knife from earth or hell with pride or shame divide. And so the Lord replied, I give you what your love has seen in 7 days. She will be clean. Excerpts of a poem by John Piper, 1990. You consider yourselves tolerant and enlightened, and you underestimate the power of your biases. Your victims feel its bite, even if you don't. We all carry hidden biases, even if it's just to a foreign accent. The further you go from what sounds to you like native sounding, the further from that accent you go, said the Wall Street Journal, the harder we have to work to understand, and so the less reliable we feel the information to be. The heavier the accent, the more skeptical we are of what we're being told. If you sound like you're not from here, my suspicion radar is on high alert. Not based on your character or even how you look, but just based on how you talk. We favor people who are like us and are suspicious of those who aren't. We are hardwired that way. Our brains prefer the path of least resistance. We are hardwired to be biased. We are not hardwired to be racist. No one is. That's a choice usually made for you by the group that you would love to be a part of more than you love the stranger. Famed journalist Lance Morrow did some research and discovered that there is one universal joke. All human beings get this joke. For example, the rest of Canada laughs at Torontonians. True. I see the people who are not from Toronto saying, that's true. Flemings tell Walloon jokes. The English tell Irish jokes and vice versa. People in Tokyo joke about people from Osaka and vice versa. Grenadians, I think the island is, 144 miles across. It's a little tiny little thing. People on one side of the island tell vicious jokes about people on the other side of the island. In the universal humor, as in universal evil, you need the other, any other, to be the butt of your joke, to be the butt of evil. But along your pilgrimage to the kingdom of God, the Lord will have you survey the inner landscape of your heart. What is there? Yesterday, a stranger asked me for directions. Not much to say about that. Would the story feel different to you if I said it was he, the stranger? He had a beard? That he was a Muslim? Asking for directions to an airport? Make any difference to you? Actually, he had a thick Iranian accent, maybe Afghani. The radar was going. Actually, all he asked for were directions to the African lion safari. He and his wife and their two-month-old wanted to go. But that ugly stuff suddenly surfaced. If I give him directions and he turns out to be a terrorist and blows up an elephant, will I be held criminally responsible? Do I have sympathy for the elephant? All of this stuff is going through my mind while I'm trying to answer the most innocuous of questions. My response was way too slow, but holding myself to what I knew I was going to be asking you to do, I think he and I were both genuinely surprised when I gave him a map and showed him where I thought it was. And then he said, looked like he had something caught in his eye, he said, "There's so much peace and goodwill in this country. It's like a paradise." I wondered what he and his ancestors had endured, and I sincerely hoped that he could not see the hesitation that had been in my heart. There is peace here now, but I've said before, if the economy turns sour, how long will it be before we favor only our own? Desperation fuels suspicion. The Hebrews, by the way, knew where they were going. The joke about the reason why they wandered in the desert for 40 years is because they wouldn't ask a woman for directions. Good joke. Doesn't work. Because they knew exactly where they were going. They're going where Abraham was. That's Canaan. We know where it is. The problem was they were not ready to occupy the land yet. His people needed to grow up as a people, and that takes time. You cannot download maturity into a group's hard drive. You've got to live together and work things out through the tough things of compromise, and they consistently kept failing. I mean, these people were so foolish. Did you talk about the dead birds last week? Okay. There was the quail on the ground. Karen, would you, you know, a bunch of dead birds on your lawn in the morning, you go and you, hey, look, dinner's arrived. I mean, they're just bizarre. But that's what they do. They are not ready to govern. Yet Aaron and Miriam wanted equal billing. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses? Hasn't he also spoken through us? But of course, that's not the real issue. The text says Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite wife he had married, for he had married an Ethiopian woman. How often we hide something offensive behind the cloak of respectability. I was talking with a fellow from Turkey on Friday. And all of that protest in the Gezi Park, he credited the CIA for all of that. I thought that was a little bit ludicrous, but he said, think it through. The Western governments don't want an Islamic government. They will do everything they can to make it a secular government because they can get away with getting the resources that they need. But that's not presentable. And so they present a protest by the people, which is presentable. Interesting logic. But leadership in this issue, with Miriam and Aaron and Moses, it's a red herring. Racist contempt fed their fury. And what was at stake was the nature of the community of the redeemed. What will it be like? Will the Exodus story be just for Jews, or does it include more? Moses, in marrying an Ethiopian, said loud and clear that this God and his plan is bigger than your biases. Anyone may come. God has made of one blood all nations to dwell on the face of the earth. It's interesting, there was a lovely little picture of Christians protecting Muslims in prayer. This was in 2011 in Tahrir Square in Egypt, surrounding them, praying lest they be attacked while they are vulnerable. And this last week, Muslims returned the favor and surrounded a Catholic church to protect them. There's hope. We get beyond the prejudices and the biases and find something that unites us. There's also no saying how a marriage in God's hand might change the world. Moses married an Ethiopian. Some of you would know that centuries later, someone that we know as the Queen of Sheba came to visit Solomon. Sheba's probably Ethiopia. When she came to visit Solomon, it was basically a family reunion. when the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, came to flee King Herod's wrath, they settled in Egypt, which, combined with Ethiopia, was home to the largest Jewish population outside of Israel at the time. The Ethiopian eunuch that the Apostle Philip met in Acts chapter 8, why had he gone to Jerusalem? To buy the book of Moses and Isaiah to boot. And both speak of Jesus. And Ethiopia was the very first country to declare itself as a Christian nation. And it still is, largely. God is bigger than your biases. So the Bible gives us more answers than we ask or even want. But it does not always give you the answers that you want. Here are the questions. Was this Ethiopian woman, Zipporah, Moses' Midianite wife? Were they the same individual, both from Midian and from Cushites, Cush? Or had Zipporah died, his first wife died, and Moses was a widower and so remarried? Or did Moses have two wives at the same time? Scripture is not clear. What's interesting in reading and hearing people on this is that their own biases determine how they answer the question. I believe that the ambiguity of the passage is intentional because Moses wants us to think it through and exposes our own biases as we look at the unanswered questions in the text. Would it make any difference to you if Moses remarried after his wife's death? Would it make any difference to you if Moses, the lawgiver, had two wives? Why or why not? I doubt you'd be offended if she wasn't a Hebrew. That was the problem for Miriam and Aaron. What about her being black? Actually, was she black? Not everybody who lives in Ethiopia is. John Piper, in his poem, and I cut this part out because I just couldn't embrace it, said that this black wife was a slave until he freed her. How did he come to that conclusion? There's nothing about her being a slave in the text. Wouldn't be a slave in Ethiopia. Your biases will shape how you interpret it, and therefore this becomes a mirror in which you can see yourself and your biases in it. It's God's invitation to wrestle with ourselves, our biases for and against others that he wants to include. So what are you trying to protect, and what happens if the scriptures won't let you protect it? Moses, in meekness, asks, what's going on in you? God's realm is not divided by bias or prejudice. If your heart is, you have some spiritual work to do. God doesn't cry out bigot or take you to a human rights commission. He puts in your face someone like Moses or like that Muslim in my face yesterday. He does something that you find hard to welcome, and suddenly an ugly part of you surfaces, and you either face it or you fail to grow. Miriam complained about Moses' black wife, assuming she was black, and her skin is turned white. You see the irony. Miriam wanted further in, but she is cast out. She felt that she ought to have a bigger part in the in crowd, but a foreigner shared a bed with the only friend of God. To meek a horse, to break a horse, the master must redirect its wild and untamed spirit. God broke Aaron and he begged for forgiveness. To be fit for divine ends, we must be meeked as well. God must break the hard tablets of our hard hearts. After 7 days, Miriam was back in community. But we never hear from her whether there was any change in her heart or not. She might have carried the resentment against Moses' marriage to the Ethiopian all the way to the grave. The scripture does not tell us. It leaves us wondering about ourselves. Look into the eyes of the friend of God, and may God meek the biases of my own heart.